Hello, you're listening to a Zen Studies Society podcast. To learn more about our community of Zen Buddhist practitioners, please visit zenstudies.org.
Shōman Kato Shū Dai Rokuju Sok Isan Suiko Isan Yū Zenji Shū Ni Shimeshi Waku Roso Hyaku Nen Go Sange No Dan No Tsuno Ie Ni Mukatte It との水耕牛のなって、さあ教科において語字を書きしてはな、一三層それがしと、これの時、もし読んで一三層と作さば、またこれ水耕牛、読んで水耕牛と作さば、また一三層それがしという。しばらく上、読んで何と作して、かすなば知恵天、教山に出て、礼拝して散る。Entangling Vines, Case 60, Isan's Water Buffalo. Isan Reiyu addressed the assembly, saying, When this old monk's 100 years are finished,I'll be reborn as a water buffalo at the believer's house by the foot of the mountain. On the water buffalo's lower left flank will be written the five characters, Monk so-and-so of Mount E. If you call it a monk from Mount E, it's still a buffalo. And if you call it a buffalo, it's still a monk of Mount E.So, tell me then, to get it right, what should you call it? Kyozan Eijaku stepped forward, bowed, and walked away. What a wonderful day, beginning in the darkness, ending in the darkness, tasting the sunlight in between. This is how every day of Sesshin goes here. Sometimes the sun doesn't come out. Sometimes our Zazen does not give us what we wanted to give us. That doesn't work out so well to begin with. And in all of this is a very important lesson, namely to just be there with what is. We started reading Sōsan Ganchi Zenji's Shinjin Mei, Faith in Mind. It is such a condensed teaching on non-duality that lays it out in plain words. And the interesting observation we can make over the many years of practice, we reread it over and over, and every time we read it, it resonates with what we have discovered ourselves. That's one of these really important lessons that we learn in this practice of Zen. Namely, that while it is helpful to read the words as description, so secondhand, written by people who had first-hand experience, is still helpful. But it really starts to change the moment where we bring our first-hand, first mind, first body, first heart experience to it. And suddenly the words illuminate from the inside.
rather than being catalysts for such an insight. They can be, certainly. But once we fill it with our own life, our life's experience, the moments we find where no person is there, but full presence. So I always appreciate hearing and reading the Shinjin Mei, faith in mind, at the beginning of these retreats. It's very nice and warm in here now. The new heating system that we have works really well. Sometimes we hear it in the Zendo, and if we take offense of the added sound, then it will be difficult to do Zazen. But if the heating system just is another manifestation of this underlying, always sounding, then it doesn't disturb at all. It actually provides heat and dehumidification in the summer. So, today we have case 60. Case 60 from this collection that's called Entangling Vines, Shumon Kattoshu, which, you know, I have done 59 cases so far. This is case 60. And it doesn't end for another couple hundred cases. The nice distinction between Shumon Kattoshu and the other great collections, such as the Hikiganroku, the Blue Cliff Record, or the Gateless Gate, the Mumonkan, is that it's just the main cases, no commentary. Nobody has really written a preface to the case, like an introduction. Or verses or commentaries. So that's the distinction of the Shumon Kattoshu. Many of the cases we find here are also found in other koan collections, not just the Mumonkan or the Heikiganroku. And who do we meet today? Today we meet Isan Reyu. Isan Reyu, who lived from 771 until 853. And Isan appears in 12 cases in the Shumon Kattoshu. This kind of biographical sketch that we give for the Zen teachers, the ancestors, mostly is drawn from one collection, the Keto Dento Roku, the record of the transmission of the lamp, which was recorded in the 1100s, so in the 12th century in China. And since this is easier for me to pronounce the names in Japanese than in Chinese, which I'm trained not, I will use the Japanese names, except when I refer to places, because places, we know where they are nowadays. So Isan Reyo was a native of Jiangxi in Fuzhou. His family name really was Zhao. He became a monk at the age of 15. And at 22, so 7 years later, after he had studied the Vinaya for 7 years, he joined the assembly under Hyakujo Eikai. We all know Hyakujo Eikai, from various koans, but also from the underlying approach to this practice. Do you remember anything that Hyakucho said that we refer to quite often? Yeah, he is in the koan about the fox, yeah, Hyakucho's fox. But he also put together rules for the monastic community, yeah.
No work, no food.
Yeah, we remember that, yeah. A day without work is a day without food. And he didn't just say that to be a mean guy. The circumstances when he was saying that was that he was sick. He was sick, and one of his attendants brought him food. And so he was really saying it about himself. A day without work is a day without food. So that is this Hyakucho Eikai. Isan Reyo became a Dharma heir to Hyakucho Eikai. His awakening, according to another book that's called the Pointing to the Moon Record, occurred when Hyakucho asked Isan to go and look if there is any fire left in this fireplace that looked completely cold, burned out. That stove, or it probably was some kind of hibachi or open fire. And it looked cold. Go and look if there's any fire left. It was obvious. We looked at it. There was no smoke. You put your hands there. No. So Isan went over, looked at it a little bit, and after searching, he said to Hyakucho, "Well, there ain't anything there. Nothing here. Can't find anything." Hyakucho got up, took probably one of the metal chopsticks that is used for moving the coals, and started poking around in the ashes. And of course, finding a small piece of ember, remarking to Isan, "You said there was none. How about this?" And Isan had this sudden awakening. So even if we sit here, zazen period after zazen period, kinhin after kinhin, day after day, session after session, year after year, and we spend a lot of time poking around in the ashes of our lives, even if it might appear dead. And if we stir too hard, you know, the dust comes up and we start sneezing and coughing. Yeah. But if we carefully examine it, that what seems to be dead, even there we can find that little bit of ember. And the biggest fire starts just with one spark, one little glowing piece. It's a wonderful metaphor, a wonderful image for what we do in this practice. As long as we are alive, there is this ember in us. And even though we might feel that our lives are just messed up, and by coming here actually getting worse, we can still find that ember. And what about this feeling worse? Yeah. I know I repeat myself, but You should have heard Joshu Roshi. He repeated himself for the better of 52 years. And he used to say, well, I'm repeating myself, but I have to, because you don't get it. So why do we sometimes feel worse when we come here in the beginning? Because it is that the energies that have been held back are being released. Sometimes I call it spiritual constipation. And when the spiritual constipation clears out, what comes out is what was backed up. No more need to be said. That's why we have the little stubs of incense in the bathrooms, you know? It's not only cheese and wine that age. You are constipated long enough, you know, that develops also some kind of aged smell. So, don't feel bad about it when it comes out. Let it go. Let it go. Don't get drawn into it. Oh, this looks just like Mr. Hanky. It's not necessary. Let it go, let it flush, and more will come. More will come. And all is driven still by that little ember that we can find. I would be concerned, though, if you would relieve yourself and there was something glowing hot. So for many years, Isan served in Hyakujo's monastery as, guess what? The tenzo, the head cook. The head cook for the whole assembly. It's so important to realize that the preparation of our meals and of the medicine that we receive at night, it's called medicine because according to the subcontinental Indian Vinaya rules, you're not allowed to eat in the evening. And even the term actually is from the Chinese yakuseki. So it means medicine stone. Medicine stone because, of course, once Buddhism moved further to the northern countries, people got hungry. And when you're very hungry, your tummy hurts. So they used to warm up stones and lie them down on the stomach so it would stop hurting. We get to eat. And the tenzo, the daiten, the shoten, the head tenzo, and the assistant tenzos, they are responsible for providing us with the food that is a manifestation of their practice, within our community. So it's a wonderful exchange of our Zazen informs and brings the energy to the whole group, which through the Daiten and the Shoten and the Tenzo finds an outlet in the food that we receive. And sometimes it's okay not to eat. So he was a Hyakujo's Tenzo. And as we have just recently experienced, sometimes the heads of monasteries say, well, I've done my part. I want somebody else to take over. I have other plans now. And so Hyakujo came to that time in his life. And he wasn't really interviewing, but he was looking for a new person to head the monastery. So one day, with the assembly there, he took a jug of water, or for water, just it's described as a jug, And he put it down and asked, "If you call this a jug, no, if you can't call this a jug, then what do you call it?" And all the monks were there. And the head monk, not the Tenzo, the head monk came and said, "You can't call it a wooden sandal." Yakuji was not impressed. Isan, the Tenzo, just on his way back to the kitchen because he had to prepare the meal, walks forward, kicks the jug over with his foot, and walks away. Hyakujo was impressed. He named Isan the head, actually, of a new monastery on that Mount Yi. That's where the Isan, Mount Yi, comes from. So Isan then tried to build that monastery. It's one of the assignments that sometimes disciples receive. So you are on your own now. Go build your own place. And that's what Isan did. So on this mountain, Mount Yi, in Tanzhu, Isan built himself a hut. And in that hut, he continued to practice. And after about 8 years, the locals had caught on to him. Students began to gather around him. And eventually, the monastery housed over 1,500 followers. Isan was well known, especially for being calm, for being patient, and for displaying skill in guiding each of these 1,500 people who came to study through his teaching. He produced 41 successors. And the most important of them appears also in this koan, Kyozan Eijaku. That is the person in the second part of the koan. But there was also Reon Shikin and Kyogen Chikan. But with his main disciple, Kyozan Eijaku, Isan together, they founded a new school that was called the Igyo lineage. Isan, Kyo-san, Igyo. The first characters from each name, Igyo, Igyo lineage. Very interesting. There are many koans that speak about the interactions between Isan and Kyozan. Many. In the Katoshu, there are at least six of them. And what happened in that Igyo lineage is that they came up with a very specific way of circles and arrangements of circles in pictures that meant very, very specific things. And actually, in the Shumon Katoshu, there will be some of the koans that deal with these circles, the circle figures. But also, let me share with you one of Isan's teachings. And that is a teaching that helps us clarify what is the relation between sudden awakening and gradual and continual cultivation. It's an important thing to know. Awakening is often understood in very, very idealized ways. You awaken and everything will just be good. And I've taken to the image that awakening is like you've been sitting in a dark room without windows for many, many, many years, and it's completely dark. And suddenly the light comes on, and you see. But there's no guarantee that you will like what you see. Because there in the corner of that room, there's a pile of used underwear that is also well-aged. You see all the things that are there. And that's where the cultivation then starts. I have to clean that up. Then after, as we know, after the washing, you have to dry it, you have to fold it, you put it out, and all of that. So here's what Isan says about that. If a person is truly awakened and has realized the fundamental, and they are aware of it themselves, in such a case, they are actually no longer tied to the poles of cultivation and non-cultivation. But ordinarily, even though the original mind has been awakened by an intervening cause, so that the person is instantaneously awakened in their reason and their spirit, yet there remains the inertia of habit, formed since the beginning of time, which cannot be completely eliminated with one stroke. They must be taught to cut off completely the stream of their habitual ideas and views caused by the still operative karma. This is cultivation, or we could call it a process of purification. I don't say that they must follow a hard and fast special method. They need only be taught the general direction that this cultivation must take. So there are specific terms actually for these two things. And even within these habitual energies and conditions that make us arise, there are ones that we can realize and awaken to. That's the bonno in the fourth vow. Bonno mujin. It's the second vow. I can't even count anymore. Bonno in the four great vows. Those are these karmic energies, the effects of habitual energies that we can see. But then there are some we cannot see. They're called shikke. Shikke. So bonno and shikke. And what Isan says here is exactly that. Even though we learn, we awaken, then we see. We can see the bonno and work on it. But we have to continue, even when superficially it seems we have addressed the real gross stuff. That's why practice and cultivation just goes on and on. As it says on these certificates that one receives when becoming, like Isan became a successor to Hyakujo, traditionally it says, finished, finished, never finished. And for that, we need that little ember. The second person, Kyozan Eijaku, as we heard, he was born 807 and lived until 883. Kyozan Eijaku appears in 12 cases in this Shumon Kattoshu. And he was a native of Shashu in present Guangdong province. His family name was She. He tried to become a monk at the age of 15 too, but his parents were not too thrilled. They didn't want him to become a monk. At 15, they were still able to contain him, But at the age of 17, he finally gained their permission. He didn't just ask. He convinced them of his determination by cutting off two of his fingers. After studying again the Vinaya, which was very prevalent in Buddhism in these years in the 9th century, he visited several of the great masters of his time in the various traditions and finally joined an assembly under Tangen Oshin. He left Tangen Oshin's place after having some measure of awakening, still going on pilgrimage, and he entered the temple of Isan Ryu. One day, he asked Isan, "Where does the true Buddha abide?" And Isan answered, "Through the marvelous functioning of awareness without thought, turn the mind inward to contemplate the infinity of the Spirit's light. With thinking exhausted, the mind returns to its source, where nature and form are eternal, and phenomena in principle are non-dual. There is the true Buddha's suchness." Hearing these words, Kyosan awakened. He stayed with Isan for 15 years and became also a Dharma heir. He's the second founder of this Igyo school and lived later different temples. And what he brought to Isan's style is that what he had encountered by Tangen, and those were those circle figures that were taken down in this Igyo lineage. So these are the folks who appear in this koan. Isan said to the assembly, "When this old monk's 100 years are finished, I will be reborn as a water buffalo at the believer's house by the foot of the mountain." Interesting statement. Why is a water buffalo? Are there any Buddhist teachings that deal with different places or different realms of existence? Yeah, of course. How many are there?
Six.
Yeah, of course, there are six. And I talked about that at length just a few koans ago in case 57, which was about the Bonmokyo, where it says that it is, one should not lose a human birth. It will not be possible to regain it in 10,000 kalpas. I talked about that in length, so I will not do it again today. But what are those realms? On the top, there are the heavenly beings, the devas. That's the penthouse, I said, of that hotel that has six floors. Then, on the fifth floor, you have the manushya, the human beings. That's where we are. Then, one floor down, you have the demigods, the asuras, and they are quite angry sometimes. They are angry because they are not God, they are only half God, and they are angry even though they have supernatural powers. So in many belief systems, actually, they are blamed for troubling us humans as illness or natural disasters and so on. But sometimes, as I said in the Teishu before, they get on the elevator and go up to the fifth floor and trash the deva's place and then go back down to their floor. That's the asuras. Animals are one level lower again. Then we have the pretas, the hungry ghosts. And finally, we have the hell dwellers in hell, naraka. So what Isan is saying here is when this old monk is 100 years and finished, so when I die, I will be reborn as a water buffalo at the believer's house by the foot of the mountain. How could it be that somebody who practiced for so long be demoted down to the animal realm? And not only that, but be owned by another human who used to come to the temple and give gifts and offerings. Of course, we won't take it literally. There is also Nansen Fugan. Nansen Fugan, who has to come in here. Nansen Fugan, we all know, is the fellow who held up the cat and had the monks decide, you say something or you say something from the Western Hall or the Eastern Hall. If you can't say anything, I will cut this cat in two. That's Nansen. So this Nansen was asked, what happens to a fully realized being when they die? And Nansen said, they will be reborn as a water buffalo at the foot of the hill. So this here borrows from that. And actually case 63 that's coming up, he also talks about these realms. As I said in the beginning, let's not get stuck on the words. So these teachings are meant to help us understand our own existence. And let's not look at those realms just from the point of view that it's used sometimes when we study Buddhism in an academic sense. It's easy to say, oh yes, these are descriptions of psychological states that we human beings go through. That works really well for the study. But as I'm sure you can attest to by now, sitting on the cushion, that hell isn't a psychological state. That's pretty real. And we go there, and it is real. We can find the aspects of ourselves, of heavenly beings, doing deeds that delight others, as human beings, as fighting with ourselves and our better nature, as hungry ghosts. I need more sleep. Or even as hell dwellers, mostly on the cushion, right? So these are real descriptions of the places that we can find ourselves, not psychologically. But if we are there, let's be there 100%. So before we go to the rest of the koan, I want to introduce you also to Joshu Roku. So Joshu Jushin, another great Zen master of that time, case 8 from his Joshu Roku. And it involves Nansen Fugan. who said that a fully awakened person will be reborn as a water buffalo at the bottom of the hill. So this Nansen was coming back from the bathhouse, was walking by the bathhouse, and he saw the monk in charge of the bath stoke the fire. And Nansen said, "What are you doing?" The monk said, "I'm heating the water for the bath." Nansen said, "Don't forget to invite the water buffalo to take a bath." The monk says, "What do monks say?"
"Hi!"
Right?
"Hi!"
That's what we say.
"Yes!"
Complete presence. Evening comes. The monk appears at Nansen's door. Opens up. Nansen says, "What's up?" The monk says, "Venerable water buffalo, the bath is ready." Nansen looks at the monk and says, "Oh, did you bring the leash?" The monk had no reply. Nansen closed the door. Later, Joshu came, and Nansen recounted what had happened. And Joshu said to Nansen, "I've got something to say. I know the monk couldn't speak, but I've got something to say." And instantly Nansen said, "Fine, but did you bring the leash with you?" And Joshu dashed forward and took his nose and said, and grabbed Nansen by the nose and started pulling him along. To which Nansen just said, okay, that's okay, but it's a little too coarse." So that is Nansen and Joshu, water buffalo. Venerable water buffalo. What does a water buffalo do? A beast of burden, it carries sometimes a heavy yoke. For whose sake? For the sake of those beings who want to eat the rice that will be harvested from the rice fields, in which the water buffalo pulls the plow. Through which the water buffalo labors every day, half his legs down in the mud, pulling them forward. Another wonderful image for the practice we are doing. For the rice to grow, for the fruit to appear in this harvest, which we are at in Harvest Sesshin, we need that water buffalo, our own water buffalo self, that continues, even if it's hard to pull out that foot, that leg from the stuck mud. And don't forget to prepare a bath for the water buffalo as well. It's not just all about labor. Even though a day without work is a day without food, we also have to take that bath and invite ourselves into it, to just slide in. Completely melt. So what Isan said then in the koan: on the water buffalo's lower left flank will be written the five characters, monk so-and-so of Mount E. There's an old Chinese story that also deals basically with karma. And it says that if you die owing somebody substantially, you will be reborn in that person's household as an animal. Maybe a water buffalo. And then your family has to go and purchase that animal to make up for what you owe. A very interesting description. Also pointing to the various realms in which we might exist, but also that karma doesn't just dissipate unless we attend to our bonno and shike. It doesn't go away by itself. And maybe one of the most important things is not to create more harmful karma. Something we should be really aware of. The realm in which a lot of harmful karma is created, where harmful causes are set, is with these fighting asuras, the titans, the demigods. Don't fight with yourself in zazen. Guess what will happen? You will lose. See the back and forth. And get into that space of the non-dual as it is. Not comparing it to anything else than what's here in front of us. So on this water buffalo, it says, monk so-and-so of Mount E. It's interesting, in the Japanese reading, it says, Soregashi, which is what the old samurai said. Soregashi. It's, I. Now Isan says, so if you call it monk from Mount E, it's still a buffalo. And if you call it a buffalo, it is still a monk of Mount E. So tell me then, to get it right, what should you call it? Anyone wants to try? The trap is wide open. The trap is wide open. What trap are we presented with? Self. Make it a thing. What is self and making it a thing?
Separating it.
Oh yeah, separating it. Duality. This or that. Is it this or is it that? What do you call it? If you can't call it a buffalo, if you can't call it a jug, what do you call it? If it's not monk so-and-so from Mount E, I say it's still a buffalo. And if you call it a buffalo, I say still it's a monk of Mount E. Whatever you do, I will be opposed to you. Because you create the opposition by taking a fixated position. So how could we answer? I don't know the sounds of a water buffalo. But that might be a good answer. So 2 weeks ago, or almost 2 weeks ago, I was doing a little Zazen Kai at Brown University with our friend Kendo Zenji, whose street name is Professor Harold Roth, who founded a contemplative studies concentration for undergraduate students at Brown. And we had the Zazen Kai, and we got to talk about Mu, and he recounted the story when he started with Philip Kaplow Roshi. They had a session in a building, so in a house. It was like a one-family house in a residential neighborhood. And there was a lot of moo shouting, a lot of moo shouting going on, because Kaplow Roshi was very much into that. So all day, all night. And suddenly, on day three of the session, animal control showed up at the door, having gotten reports that there is livestock in distress. And of course, it was not zoned for livestock either. Moo. Would be a good answer here, true. But Kyozan Ejaku, just like Isan, he just stepped forward, manifested himself in a non-dual way, and walked away. Not different from Isan himself, kicking over that jug, yeah? So, an interesting koan. Zen uses a lot of images, metaphors, stories to illuminate aspects of our own being. And it's always nice to use them to shine or to reflect upon that nature that we carry in ourselves. See if you can connect with that water buffalo that toils day in and day out in this practice, that carries a heavy yoke for our sake. See if you can find the monk who said about the jug, it's, you can't call it a wooden sandal. That's our thinking self. See if you find devas, if you find yourself in the human realm. If the asuras appear, or when they appear. When your paramecium mind, your animal mind comes. Just reacting. When the hungry ghosts manifest. Hell, I don't have to remind you of, you will know. So, we have a wonderfully closed group, but open at the same time. It seems that we have this wonderful opportunity to even spend our presence reinforced by each other's efforts. in a way that really makes each of us accountable to each other. It's not often the case that we can experience that when there are 40 participants here. It's quite different. So I, for my part, consider this a cup of the most delicious wine. So let's continue to sip on that cup together. And see where it brings us.
This has been a Zen Studies Society podcast. If you found it to be of interest, please consider making a donation by visiting zenstudies.org/donate. Thank you for listening.